in a certain sense, you kind of have to have been to the shirim the last 15 years to understand what I'm going to say today, because I don't say the same thing all the time, and I just kind of build up on what I've said previously. So if you don't know what I've said previously, so obviously you won't understand most of what I'm saying, and that's okay. And most of us do know, so see? Yeah. So, yeah. Wow. So, we're going to look in, and that's where we're going to focus on Perek Kaf Zayin. Perek Kaf Zayin is, of course, one of the more dramatic scenes in the Book of Bereishit. That is the point where Yitzchak calls in Esav to give him a bracha, and of course, I really don't want to ruin the story for some of you if you're not familiar with it. And then Rivka tells Yaakov to dress up as Esav and to go in, and so on and so forth. So this is what I'm going to focus on, but it's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is something else. So sometimes you need to know where you're looking, but you also need to know what you're looking for. Because if you don't know what you're looking for, then the odds are quite strong you're not going to find it. And I know that one could just read this to try to understand this on its own, but you can't understand this on its own. This is one section specifically that cannot be understood. If you just read this section by itself, you cannot really understand what is taking place. But now, just to move back to a much larger issue, and that is, we have over here our wonderful, dysfunctional, patriarchal family. So any of you who are in such dysfunctional relationships now realize it goes very far back. And one of the things that I've felt and feel, and I've said many times, that one would really, to understand this parsha properly, one would need to understand all of the relationships. So I'm going to really focus on one relationship this time. So that's why I want to make sure that you hear this part very clearly. Of course, the obvious relationships are to understand the Rivka-Yitzchak relationship. I mean, I can say this like this. Did they keep secrets from one another, right? And you realize that that's, did Yitzchak keep any secrets from Rivka? Or is it only Rivka from Yitzchak? So I'm saying is that relationship goes in both ways, and that just now became a much more intriguing question in terms of did they keep secrets from one another? Of course, the Yitzchak-Esav relationship is interesting, and then the Yitzchak-Yaakov relationship is perhaps even more interesting. The Rivka-Yaakov relationship is interesting, but maybe the Rivka-Esav relationship is interesting. And as I said, I'm not talking about all of that, because I've spoken about all of those things on other occasions. But there is another relationship in all of this that needs to be evaluated, understood, and that is God. Right? This is the Bible, and we do have the right to be looking for God within the Bible. So therefore, where does God come into all of this? Now, maybe for some of you that seems like such an obvious or simple question. So obvious, perhaps, simple, no. And so at least now you know what it is that we're looking for. We are people, men and women, in search of God, to borrow a term. So now we could begin. V'yihi zaken Yitzchak, v'tichena einav miraot, v'yikra et Esav b'no hagadol, v'yomilav b'ni, v'yomilav hineni. So Yitzchak gets elderly, his eyesight goes. And by the way, you would suspect that somebody whose eyesight is poor, that their hearing is better. And that's going to be an interesting subtext in terms of Yitzchak's hearing, or even sense of touch. And he calls his son, Vayomer Elav Hineni. And he says, I'm here. And by the way, so far that sounds pretty good, because Hineni is a good biblical answer. So we like that so far. Vayomer, he says, Hinena Zakanti Lo Yadati Yomuti. He says, I've become old, I don't know when I'm going to die. And there we can pause and ask ourselves, when did Yitzchak start saying this, and how often has he said this? Because we remember a scene a very long time ago where Esav says, you know, I'm going to die. So where does Esav get this from? Has his father been saying this? You know, oh, I think I'm going to die. I'm really old. And so again, I ask this sincerely. At which point has Yitzchak started to say things like this? V'ata sana kelecha, telcha v'kashtecha, So there's a lot in this verse. We met Esav as a hunter, and a hunter is something which frightened us, because the only other hunter of renown till this point was Nimrod. And Nimrod is, by the way, beneath the surface of this entire section. And Nimrod was not a good person. The easiest way of understanding this is his name, Nimrod, the one who rebels. And Nimrod is a hunter. And Nimrod, on a midrashic level, is the one who tries to kill Avraham. So over here, and Avraham is a man of the tents, and he does his mitzvot from the tents. So one of the great ironies of this entire section is the irony that Yitzchak can have two sons, one who's remarkably similar to Nimrod, and the other who's remarkably similar to his nemesis, Avraham, and they're both in one family. And what that, or where that takes Yitzchak's thought, that, and again, which really should be obvious, is, wow, what would the world be like if we could have, or if we could have, or if we can, joined forces? Can you imagine if the power of Nimrod was actually supporting the thought of Avraham? Then the world would be in such a different place. And now perhaps these two, my sons, can work together. And again, who knows where this ends up? Of course, that's going to be countered very specifically. And again, if you wonder why I'm saying that, that's exactly going to be the prophecy that Rivka receives, is that they are two nations, which means they're not even one family. They're going to be two nations. As much as a parent can preach to their children, you know, you always have to be there for your siblings. You always have to take care of one another. And Rivka's been given this advanced information by saying, no, they're not even going to be one nation, the two of them. So now, if you know that that's what she knows and it's what Yitzchak doesn't know, so I mean, Yitzchak thinks that they should be working together just by process of our theory of lack of prophecy knowledge. So, lack of prophetic knowledge. That's a new one. It is a new one. So what Yitzchak then does is actually so wonderful and remarkable. And this goes against all of those commentaries who bother me. And I won't even give them the credit today. And that is that he knows who Esav is, and he turns Esav's hunting into a mitzvah. Which means when we're told that Esav fulfills the commandment of honoring one's parent, and again, not parents, it's never Rivka, which goes to that relationship, it's always only Yitzchak. It's Yitzchak who should take the credit for that, because Yitzchak goes and asks him to do something which he wants to do. Which means he values, again, part of this wonderful, wonderful parenting of Yitzchak, he values his son for who he is and asks him to do what he does, which then turns it into a mitzvah, continuing into the next verse, where he says, Vaseli matamim kasher ahavti, and make for me food like I like, and bring it to me, I'll eat it. And by the way, he sees him as the hunter and the one who's going to bring food, so that also gives you some insight into another previous section, where Esav comes to Yaakov and asks him for food, because Yitzchak sees Esav's job as the one to hunt and to bring food, and to make the food and bring it to people, because he wants to turn Esav's talents into a mitzvah. So now you realize where there really is a breakdown there in that previous episode, where Esav is not living up to what Yitzchak has wanted him to do. And sometimes we, even out for our parents, recognize our strengths. Sometimes it gets difficult even to try to do our strengths. But as I said, this section can't be understood by itself, and it is informed by other sections, and it informs other sections as well. It goes in both directions. And he goes and he brings him food. Now, was there, 1 second, I probably skipped something. Yes, I skipped. Pasuk Dalet. Make food for me like I like. In order that I be able to, now what do those words, tivarechecha nafshi, mean? That my soul will bless you before I die. And I'm going to ask you a very obvious question, which may not have been obvious to you until this moment. What kind of blessing is this that he wants to give to Esav? And oh, I'll say this a little differently to make sure that you get it. Who's missing from these number of verses? And the answer is, because I don't trust any of you, the answer is God. There is no mention of God in all of this. And of course you can say, well, what does it mean to bless somebody other than God is there? And I will nonetheless insist that, okay, that's possible. I'm not necessarily going to agree. Very interesting. If somebody sneezes, does an atheist say bless you? Okay, I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to find someone with a cold and find an atheist and put them together and see. We'll have to do an experiment and see what happens. But I don't think that they would have some kind of philosophical problem saying, "Bless you. Okay, you should be blessed. Who should bless you? The universe should bless you. The I don't know whatever." I understand that. I didn't ask. I understand. I didn't ask that. I asked, would they say bless you? Could they say bless you? My point over here is that Yitzhak's going to bless Esav. But and again, for all of us, this can be very, very obvious that God is here, except for one problem. And what's that one problem? Okay. That God isn't here. Okay. Now, I know that you think that I'm exaggerating this, and that's fine. V'Rivka Shomat, and Rivka hears, and Rivka always hears. The question is, how does Rivka hear? Does Rivka hear, is this part of a prophetic ability? Is this something which is a gift from God? Again, I'm bringing God into this, as, at least as a possibility. Or is this something that she was, you know, she was in the kitchen, but she was listening to what was going on inside. And I apologize for my totally sexist portrayal. V'Rivka merit, okay, Rivka hears, B'daber Yitzchak el Esav b'no, V'yelech Esav ha-sadeh l'tzud tzayid l'havi. She hears this. It's also very telling. He hears Yitzchak talking to Esav b'no, talking to Esav his son, and Esav then goes, V'Rivka merit el Yaakov b'na. And Rivka then calls her son Yaakov. So yeah, the language over here is really interesting, and we're not going to do it full justice right now. Lamor, and she says to Yaakov, saying, okay, which means this is a quote. This is what she said. Shamati et avicha medaber el Esav achicha Lamor. I heard your father speaking to Esav, your brother, saying. So again, quote. Havili tzayid, bring for me some food from the hunt. Vaseli matamim vochela, and make for me food, and I will eat it. Va'avurechecha lefnei Hashem lefnei moti, and I will bless you in front of God before I die. So, I think even all of you could have okay. I'll be nice. You know what? If I would have read all of this without emphasizing it, some of you would have gotten it. But I emphasize this so much that I think it was virtually impossible to miss this. And that really comes down to the issue over here, that I wouldn't have made such a big deal about Yitzchak not saying God until I know that Rivka does say God. So now, of course, the question comes up, okay, so why does Rivka say God? And is God here? Is God not here? Is that really, again, we heard what Yitzchak said and we trust our biblical narrative and that's what he actually said. And we trust what Rivka said. So essentially, we have a problem. And by the way, isn't this a wonderful problem? Because this is the problem of the whole relationship, is that Yitzchak says one thing and Rivka says something else, and we have our wonderful dysfunctional family, and part of this is again, if you're Yaakov also, you hear your father saying one thing, you hear your mother saying something else. So this is actually perfect. Here we have yet another example, and this shouldn't have been so difficult. I mean, that's really my point. This shouldn't have been so difficult. And I know that some of you are suspecting that I'm making a big deal out of nothing, and admittedly so, there are commentaries who will go out of the way and tell us that I'm making a big deal out of nothing. But then the only question is if that's correct or not. As we continue, then she says, Pasachet v'ata b'ni shema b'koli l'asher ani mitzaveh otach. So now, son, listen to me and do as I command you. So now you realize, again, our wonderful dysfunctional patriarchal family, where one parent gave one son an instruction and the other parent gives the other son, and it's not just instruction. Mitzaveh, I am commanding you. Which means the brilliance of Yitzchak's parenting is to give a commandment, turning Esav's hunting into a mitzvah of Kibud Av, and now he can bless him because Esav is now involved in the spiritual pursuit, honoring his parent. And at the same time, Rivka is telling her son, Yaakov, giving him a mitzvah, but his mitzvah is actually to go in and to try to fool his fathers. And at this point, you realize that there is a no-win situation over here. Because if you're Yaakov, and Yaakov's life is always difficult and is always complicated, and he's always going to be conflicted between various obligations and responsibilities, at every single stage of his life. So it's good that you already realize it here. The question is if we realized it earlier or not. And I'll say it again, that this is a wonderful section to help inform what we've seen earlier. But over here, Yaakov is essentially in an impossible situation. Now, again, there are various things to say, but I don't want to lose focus on what the main issue is, because I am really interested in this issue of God, because I'm really interested in Yitzhak's relationship with God. I'm interested in Esav's relationship with God more than anything else, Rivka's relationship with God, and I guess Yaakov's relationship with God, which means normally when we speak about this family, we're going to be talking about all of the inner relationships. But aside from that, this God quotient in all of this is really what is intriguing. Rav Hirsch, who I didn't say my name before, actually says something very interesting over here. He says that he says that Rivka sending Yaakov in could not ultimately work on a long, it wasn't a long-term solution, which means that he will be found out sooner rather than later. So if that's the case, then what in the world was he doing? Now, I have an answer to that, but I'm intrigued in what he said, because he sees the strategy as part of the issue. And that is that Rivka was trying to show something she was trying to prove something to Yitzchak, and that was, Yitzchak, look how easily you're fooled, even by an innocent guy like Yaakov can fool you. Do you think somebody else could have fooled you along the way over here? Which essentially, you're not getting this. She's trying to articulate, Esav has been fooling you for a very long time. And look how easy it is to fool you. Even Yaakov. Yaakov's an Ishtam. He can fool you. Can you imagine how Esav, who's a little bit more devious and a hunter and so on, that he's been fooling him? So, in terms of who he is. In terms of, as I said, that's what Rav Hirsch, that's where he ends up. He wants to say that this section is, it's Rivka trying to communicate something to Yitzchak. Meaning, that's really interesting, because you would have thought, in this whole family, part of the problem is the lack of communication between the two. You know, somebody yesterday sent me a text message and asked me, they have to speak by Sheva Brachot, can I give them a good Dvar Torah from Parsha Toldot? So I still haven't responded to them. At some point last night, I said, you do realize that it's a bunch of dysfunctional relationships. Like, what exactly do you want to say over here? Right? And so over here, what's interesting about Rav Hirsch is he's saying is that this is communication, that Rivka is communicating with Yitzchak by trying to show him, look, you are easily fooled and you should be a little bit more careful and a little bit more, look into things a little bit more, which is an interesting term to use for somebody who can't see. But that's exactly part of the problem. If Yitzchak wants to give this, if Yitzchak wants to give blessings to Esav, then presumably he thinks that Esav is somebody deserving of blessings. And apparently what Rivka is saying is that he has fooled you, he is not deserving of this. And again, I told you, I'm not going into this whole read of who Esav is, that really doesn't concern me. It's seeing this as a strategy, which is far more interesting than actually, see, because where you're taking me now is, you're going to take me is, what is the personality of Esav and how does Yitzchak see it? And as I said, that doesn't concern me as much today, so I really don't want to go there. But as I said, what's interesting is that he's claiming that there is a conversation taking place, because sometimes we converse even without speaking. And that's what he was trying to do. And his point is well taken, at least in the sense that this was not going to be a long-term solution. What I could say, and I'm sure I've had said before, is I think that ultimately the objective over here is not for Yaakov to get the bracha, but to make sure that Esav doesn't get the bracha. And I think that that's really what's going on. Nonetheless, let's read a little bit more, because the major difference between the two of them was that Rivka spoke of God in this, while Yitzchak had not. If we'll skip along a little bit, so eventually Yaakov is going to come in, and we'll go down to Pasuk Yudchet. V'yavo el aviv, v'yomer avi. He comes to his father and he says, "Avi." Now I want you to be very careful, because really the proper way of doing this would have been to isolate every word that Yaakov says and then go down to every word that Esav's going to say when he comes in and to compare them. I mean, really what I'm getting at is that you can't probably understand Hakol Kol Yaakov unless you understand this. So he comes in and he says, Avi, v'yomer hineni. Yeah. V'yavo al avi, v'yomer avi, v'yomineni, mi atabini. So right away, there is a question on Yitzchak's part. Vayomer Yaakov el Aviv, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, Asiti Kasher Dibar Te Elai. And at face value, Yaakov is saying something which isn't true, which his mother told him he has to say. The only thing which complicates this a little bit is that Yaakov has already purchased the firstborn from Esav. So what does it mean now that he's purchased it? And therefore, on some level, he can say, you may not know this, but I am Esav, your firstborn, because I've bought that responsibility. And therefore, it's not as untrue as perhaps we may think it is. Then he says something else, kum na. So what does kum na mean? Please sit up. Shiva, sit up. V'achla mitzidi bavur tevorachani nafshecha. And please sit up so that your soul can bless me. Now that's actually interesting, because he goes back to the way that Yitzchak had actually said it, so which now will go to, and not the way that Rivka said it to him. Because what Yitzchak said is Tavarech Nafshi B'Terem Amot. On the other hand, what Rivka had said to him is that she put God in the sentence, and Yaakov does not put God in the sentence over here, so that you need to wonder why it is that he is doing this. Vayomer Yitzchak Obeno, Mazami Hartilim Tzobini. You know, how did you get here so quickly? Vayomer, and he says, Ki Hakara Hashem Elokecha Lefanai. God has helped me. At that point, Vayomer Yitzchak El Yaakov, Geshen Evim, come close, right? Hatazeb Ben Esav. Well, are you really Esav? So what is it that has gotten him to question at this point? So. And it's at this point he comes close. Vayesh Yaakov Yitzchak Aviv Vayimusha Vayomer Hakol Kol Yaakov Yidayin De'Esav. The voice is Yaakov and Esav. Now, of course, you could have said that what Yaakov had really done was he was somebody who knew how to speak like his brother, like he's doing his brother's voice. He's doing the way, right? He was imitating his brother. I'm not convinced that that is what's going on over here. On one level, it's very likely that as twins, they were probably more similar than we feel comfortable admitting. And they may have spoken much, you know, closer, just in terms, again, their DNA is probably much closer to one another than you would possibly feel comfortable with. I would assume that what it is that Yaakov's going in and on some level trying to be like Esav, but the problem is that, yeah, how was he like Esav? Initially, he didn't say God. And that's important. There was something else over here. But, so let's just go down for a second. When Esav comes in Pasuk Lamed, V'yi kasher kilai Yitzhak levarechet Yaakov, V'yi ach yatsa yatso, Yaakov me'ed p'nei Yitzhak aviv, Yaakov goes out, V'esav achiv ba mitzedo. And Esav comes in with the hunt. V'yaskam hum atamim v'yivel aviv, V'yom el aviv yakum avi. Do you notice the difference? Yeah, there's no please. There's no please. That, by the way, could be the whole Dvar Torah, right? What's the difference in Yaakov and Esav? Yaakov said please, and Esav doesn't. Esav says, get up. Yakum Avi, Dad, get up. Now, I'm not saying that there's something necessarily really bad about Esav. I mean, we know that may be incredibly exaggerated. We've also spoken about that a number of times. Again, there's no question that sometimes when Chazal are speaking about Esav, they're speaking about Rome, they're speaking about Christianity. They are watching the Roman soldiers destroy Jerusalem. They're watching the Roman soldiers rape and pillage and murder and steal. And therefore they're saying, oh, when Esav came in from the field, he was raping and he was murdering and he was stealing. What made them say that? Not so much that's what Esav did. Again, we turn Esav into a much harsher character. But they're saying because the either literal descendants or spiritual descendants of Esav behave like that, so there must have been some kind of origin for that behavior. So yes, we tend to make Esav sound much worse than he is, and I'm not interested in doing that now, but I am interested in pointing out that there is a difference between that the two of them speak to their father, which is particularly ironic when we're told that, oh, Esav is the one who he honors his father. So again, you just have to think about that for a second. Really, the issue of Esav being superior in honoring his father over Yaakov has nothing to do with the way they honored their father, but rather has to do with Yaakov being away for so many years. If Yaakov is afraid that Esav has superiority, it's that all those years he didn't help his parents, all those years he's been away. So Esav's been around, and presumably Esav has been helping. But if you're going to go right over here into this little snapshot and compare the way that Esav speaks and the way that Yaakov speaks, Esav is gruffer. Esav is a little more curt. Esav, dad, get up. Where Yaakov is, please. And I'm not overreading this over here, because again, this is all we can do. And he says, Yakom v'cha mitzayid b'no, ba'avur t'orcheni nafshecha. And again, that goes into the same point. So I would suspect that when Yaakov comes in, he's speaking like Esav, and he does, except he couldn't help himself, and he says, please. One thing is that you'll notice when you go all the way through, he will not mention anything about God. And he says that you bless him. V'yom li Yitzchak aviv mi'ata v'yom ani ben chabach chorcha Esav. V'yicharad Yitzchak charada gdola ad ma'od v'yom mi eifo hu hatzad tzayid revili v'chal mikol term rova avarchehu gam baruch hiya. And I blessed him and he will be blessed. K'shama Esav et divrei aviv v'yitzak tzaka gdola omara ad ma'od v'yom il aviv barcheni gam ani avig. Dad, bless me. But by the way, I just want to make sure you're following me still. God is not mentioned at all in this section. You bless me. V'yom bachi b'mar v'yikach b'irchatecha. He came and took your bracha. V'yom achi kara shmo Yaakov v'yakfeinu zeh pamayim et b'chorati lakach v'nei ata lakach et b'irchati. So he took the b'chorati, he took the firstborn, which by the way, may be all the reason for him to have legitimately taken this as well. V'yomer halo atzal t'li bracha. Do you have a bracha for me? And maybe I'll stress, do you have a bracha for me? V'yayin yitzach v'yom leisav, hein gevir samtiv lach, v'et kol achavnatit lo lavadim, v'degam t'vish samachtiv, v'locha eifo ma'aseh b'ni, v'yom leisav ilvi, ha'bracha achati lacha, avi barcheni gam ani avi. Give me a blessing. V'yisa eisav kolo v'yevk, v'yayin yitzach avi, v'yom leisav, hine meshmanei ha'aretz yeh, moshevech mital shemayim me'al. V'alchar b'cha t'chieh v'techicha ta'avod v'yakashir tarid farakta ulomi al tzavarecha, and so on. But there is one thing missing in this whole conversation, in both directions, and that is God is not mentioned over here at all. And it's something which I think is quite important, because I'm going to say it again, when Yitzchak says Akol Kol Yaakov, I think it was a couple of points. Do you all remember the famous Beit HaLevi? Beit HaLevi is our favorite commentary. This section of the Beit HaLevi is our favorite commentary in all of Chumash. Right? You don't have it in front of you. The Beit HaLevi says, "Hakol kol Yaakov yadayim yidei Esav v'lo hikiru v'yavarechoto l'cha'ora yesh lahavin." Right? We should understand. Kevan da'akara shel hakol haya neged akara shel yadayim, that there was a contradiction between the voice and between the hands. If you have a contradiction, then why did he continue and give the blessing? By the way, this is so brisker. You know, Beit HaLevi is the father of Chaim, and so this is so brisk. What's he saying? You have shnei psukim amchishim zed zeh. So what do? You wait. Which means if you have two contradictory things, what was it that allowed him to break the tie? Why does he go further and give the bracha? He should have stopped right there because you have contradictory information. By the way, if you don't realize this, this is a really good question. So we like the Beit HaLevi for his question, but that's not why we like it. The Lulu de Mistafina. Lulu Mistafina is this should become your new favorite term. The Lule de Mistafina. No, we got a new one. Lule de Mistafina means if I were not afraid. So somebody always writes such things when they're going to say something outrageous, but they have to say, if I wasn't afraid, Lulu de Mistafina, I wasn't afraid, so then you would say, hold it, if I weren't afraid, then you shouldn't say it. So he says, I'm afraid to say this, but then you shouldn't say it, but they always say, I'm afraid to say it, and then they say it. So whenever you see a Lulu de Mistafina coming, so you know that something's going to be good, because he knows that he shouldn't be saying this, and he's saying it anyway. So you now just have to figure out how you can throw this into your everyday terminology and everyday speaking.
We do it all the time.
V'lula de Mistafina. Yeah, V'lula de Mistafina. I know everybody gets something out of class. V'lula de Mistafina. If I weren't afraid, Hayaef Shalomar, it would have been possible to say, Dera Yitzchak, Herbe Levodko, he did a lot of things to check, Imu Bemet Esav, O who mita'elto, to check if this is Esav or somebody trying to fool him. V'yeshlomer, and you can also say, t'gam b'tchila nityarei Esav mizeh, and you can say that Esav was afraid of this even before the situation happened. Because Esav knows that Yaakov is somebody that can't be trusted. Esav knows that Rivka's always listening into other people's conversations. And he's worried that there's going to be a plot. So what do you do when there's going to be a plot? And by the way, I strongly suspect that whoever the writers are of Get Smart have to be descendants of the Beit HaLevi. I mean, this is descendants of students. But listen to what he says. He goes, "V'yesh lomer d'gam b'tchila nityar Esav mizeh." Esav was afraid of this. "V'kodem shalach miyitzchak amar la'aviv." And before he left, he said to his father, "Siman, let me give you a sign that it's really me when I come back. Sheivadeh shehu Esav, that you'll know it's Esav. Sheishane kolo kikolo sheYaakov." He says that when I come back, I'm going to speak like Yaakov. Why would Esav speak like Yaakov? He says, "Uladaber benachat ki Yaakov." I'm going to speak, you know, very nicely and respectfully like Yaakov. "Ulaskir shem shemayim." I'm going to use God in my conversation. "Vizeo simun shehu Esav," and that's the sign that it's Esav. "To im yavo Yaakov latot," because if Yaakov comes in, "Hare mistama yishanehu kolo shenimeku kolo Esav," because Yaakov's going to imitate Esav. So, yes, the old double. The old double switcheroo. The old double switcheroo is what the Beit HaLevi said happened. As I said, this is my absolute favorite commentary on all of Chumash. And what's the matter?
It's absolutely
he made it up. No. I'll tell you exactly where he gets it from. Because he continues and he says, and I'm going to skip a little bit. "Vizesha amar kol Yaakov d'aniyed Esav reishnei simanim mati'imim v'lo hikiroto v'alken v'yirecha." Therefore, when he says, "Hakol kol Yaakov v'aniyed Esav," both signs are there, and now I can continue and progressing. What was his starting point? His starting point was a good question. The voice and the hands are contradictory. Now they're no longer contradictory. Essentially, really what he's saying, and this helped me a lot in terms of articulating a particular issue. That sentence, "Hakol kol Yaakov v'dayin de'esav," does it end with a question mark or does it end with an exclamation point? That's really where he's helping us. He's claiming it ends with an exclamation point. "Hakol kol Yaakov v'dayin de'esav," the Beit HaLevi. This is the namesake, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, right? This is his great-grandfather, Reb Chaim's father. The first Rabbi Soloveitchik, who was a rabbi of Brisk. Later was his son, Reb Chaim, and later was his son, the Griz. So, again, this is really interesting, but that's what it helped me with in terms of, okay, now how do we read that verse? Because he's correct. If it's a question mark, which is really where he started, if it's held it, "Hakol kol Yaakov v'dayin de'esav," so why does he continue? And then he should have stopped. So his conclusion is, it can't be a question mark, it has to be an exclamation point. Again, he's not saying all of this with the using the diktuk, but that's obviously what it is in the back of his mind over here, and therefore he comes to this really creative explanation of how it could be. Look, I can say the same thing differently. I can say that what Yitzchak was trying to do the whole time was to get Esav to become more spiritual. What's he sending him to do? He's sending him to do a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah he's sending him to do? He's trying to turn his hunting into kibbutz. So therefore, he's trying to turn Esav into doing mitzvah. So now, as far as he's concerned, what I'm saying now, I'm very serious about. Forget everything else, the Beit HaLevi. I'm very serious about this. Is that as far as he's concerned, every time that Esav has hunted till now, he has been doing something which is the way the famous No Debi Yehuda. If you don't know what it is, you should feel completely inadequate. But somebody asked the No Debi Yehuda, I like to hunt. So at the end of the tshuva, he says, listen, you're allowed to hunt. Mainly what the tshuva deals with is what Tsar Balei Chaim is. And he's very, very liberal on that. But at the end he says, listen, who do you see as hunters? Nimrod's a hunter. Esav's a hunter. It's not a nice job for a Jewish boy. That's really what it comes down to at the end of his tshuva. So till this point, he was the hunter and the one that the No Debi Yehuda didn't like. But now something changed. During this particular hunt, he was a shliach mitzvah. During this particular hunt, he was doing the mitzvah kivud av. During this particular one, he again, I can go one more step. Maybe even is on a mission from God at this point, because it's a mitzvah of honoring his parents. So therefore, Yitzhak is hoping that when somebody's involved in the world of a mitzvah, it's transformative. So now the Esav that comes back is not the Esav that has come back every other time. Now it's an Esav who come back, and look at this. He's saying, please, and now he's talking about God. And then actually Yitzhak does something which is very interesting. What Yitzhak does, which is what I skipped over, he gives the bracha. And what exactly does it say in the bracha? Once it's the Kol Kol Yaakov Yedayin De'Esav, Pasuk Kaf Gimel says that he doesn't recognize who it is, and he gives him the Berachehu. And he says, Yitzchak says, bring me food. He brings him food. He also brings him wine. He was not commanded to bring wine. He also brings him wine. So Yaakov definitely knows what he's doing over here. And then, Posukav Zayin, v'yigash v'yishaklo v'yirachat reach begadav v'yivarchehu v'yom ra'e reach b'ni k'reach sadeh asher bercho Hashem. He blesses him. The field is blessed by God. Remember, Yitzchak prays from the field. For Yitzchak, there is spirituality to be found in the field. The only thing about Yitzchak is he thinks that Esav has found that spirituality. Because now Esav is speaking nicely. Now Esav is saying, please. Now Esav is speaking about God. V'yitain lecha elokim mital ha-shamayim. And may God give you. So what's so interesting over here is that once Esav, but it's not really Esav, again, sorry for ruining that as well. Once Esav speaks about God, then Yitzchak speaks about God to Esav. So then he gives them this blessing, and where God is involved in all of this. And again, I told you, this whole issue is we're looking for God in all of this. And I think you realize that now how complicated this question is. Later, when Esav comes back, Esav doesn't speak properly. Esav doesn't speak kindly. Esav doesn't say please. And Esav doesn't mention God. And Yitzchak's response is he doesn't mention God when he gives him that bracha. So, and I'll tell you a couple of more things. I searched through. Every single time Esav speaks in the Torah, Esav never mentions God. Okay, we'll see a little bit more as we move on, but I'm already letting you know at this point. Later on, when Yaakov will get the bracha, which is in source number 2, this is afterwards when Yaakov is going to leave. Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov v'yavarechoto. He blesses him and he says, "No, lo tikachish b'no Kanan," and so on. And then he says, "Pasuk Gimel v'kel shakai yavarechotcha." Right. And then at the end, v'yiten lecha brachat Avram and Asher Natan Elokim laAvraham. So Yitzchak speaks of God, meaning Yitzchak is a God seeker and a God speaker and a God relationship. We actually should have gotten that from the very, very beginning of the parsha, where we're told about the infertility that Rivka had, that she endured, and we're told that Yitzchak prays and God responds, which means Yitzchak as a spiritual character is somebody that we should recognize right away. But it's very interesting that to Esav he doesn't speak about God, unless he thinks that Esav is somebody now who's ready to have that conversation about God. And I think that there is something going on over here now. We've avoided all the commentaries till now, and we may be better off continuing this way. But I'll just show you how, you know, maybe this is all a little more complicated. Rashi says, again, quoting Rivka, saying Rivka quoting Yitzchak, saying he's going to bless you lifnei Hashem. So Rashi says Bereshuto sheyaskim al yadi. So therefore, it's that God again will concur as well. And for the Seichel Tov writes, Lefnei Hashem, Sheshchina imo, Misakemet she'im lo hiskira lo, Shem ha-miyuchad, Haya omer la, V'chi b'misha yivrchenu, M'pi atzmo, Ani mita'ehu chas v'shalom, Berchot lo yad lilonu, Yo ilonu, V'nimtzachote, Lekach shinta b'davar v'mra, Kach shamati mi'avicha, Shemar levarechet esav lefnei Hashem, Dainu m'pi Hashem. She essentially says that, he says that Rivka made it up, the Lifnei Hashem, that Yitzchak never said it. Yaakov would have said, okay, Yitzchak's going to bless him. So what? Which means the blessing would have been from Yitzchak. By the way, that's also really interesting. Does Esav have a relationship with God? Does Esav care if the blessing is from God? Or is it really that he wants a blessing from his father? Is it that he wants his father's... One of the things that Yaakov just now got at the end of the parasha, he was given the land of Israel. Does Esav care? Again, I'm being very serious about that. Does Esav fight him? Oh, you got the land of Israel. Or does Esav really not care that much about, you know, why would I live in the land of Israel? You know, there are nicer places to live. I don't need to live in the land of Israel. So, meaning that should have been something which bothered him incredibly. We don't see any response. He's bothered that Yaakov went and took the Bechorah, but certain things, we're not told that he's troubled by that. Of course, we don't necessarily understand everything involved in the Bechorah. But over here, the Seichel Tov is saying that Rivka made this up because she thought it was important that Yaakov gets this bracha or Esav doesn't get it. And she knew that if she would have said to Yaakov what Yitzchak really said, then Yaakov would not have bothered with it. It's okay, so what? So let the old man say nice things to Esav, so what? But it's only because God is involved in it. So again, I would think that is interesting. Right. Which takes us back to what was it in the Bechorah that he didn't really want, Vayivez, what did he not like? So we don't necessarily know that. Let's look at the Radak. He writes, Lefnei Hashem, again, those are the words added by Rivka, Hosifa lo Lefnei Hashem, she adds those words, Mashalo Amarhu, with that which Yitzchak did not say, Kidei lachnis belibo shel Yaakov, davar gadol hu birchat aviv, ki lefnei Hashem tihyeh, klomar binuvoah shetishra alav be'et habracha yivrchehu. Saying that, meaning, she's saying lefnei Hashem as a commentary, but standing in front of your father as he's blessing you, the Shekhinah will be brought into this, and there will be a prophetic experience which is taking place, and that's something which is worthwhile for you to do. But again, it's her editing it, but her explaining what's really taking place. The Chizkuni, it's again similar, right? Lefnei Hashem, Pirish, Al pi hadibur, Sha'al kol bracha, bracha, shivracha, avicha, kadosh baruch hu yaskim al yado. That even though it's just from your father, just, God agrees with your father because your father is such a holy man. Again, people go running to all kinds of people to get brachot. Can you imagine getting a bracha from Yitzchak Avinu? I mean, and that's what she's saying. Go get a bracha from Yitzchak. And part of what's going to bother some of the commentaries, and look at the last couple of words in the Chizkuni, V'dugmezeh pirashnu b'parsha Noach gabi Nimrod. So hold it. How did Nimrod get back into this? So in source 7, we're told V'kushi alad at Nimrod hu hachel liot gibor ba'aretz hu haya gibor tzayid lefnei Hashem. So that's also very interesting that lefnei Hashem is used over there. He was a great hunter in front of God. And what does in the world does that mean? Now this chizkuni is very similar to source 8 and 9, which was Yitzchak Rav Yosef Kara, not to be confused with Rav Yosef Karo, much earlier commentary. And we have his commentary here in Bereshit and in Perek of Zayin, right here by the bracha, and back in Perek Yud. So the one over here, actually, in the best part, will say Yesh kan kichamesh milim mitushtashot, that from the manuscript there are 5 words that can't be deciphered. So let's leave that for a second, because he's also going to go back to Nimrod. So let's just look in what he says about Nimrod at the end of source number 9. Halamanatil v'nei Hashem perusho al pi adibur. Afkan perisho mimorom nigzar al Nimrod shetitzlach ruach gvura alav v'yitpos nitzachon b'kol asher yelech. That Nimrod is a great hunter in front of God, that it was with God's decree that he should be, meaning God gave him that power. It was God's decision. So over here as well, the bracha, lefnei Hashem, that God will concur with whatever Yitzchak does. So again, this, what you realize is that people are trying to figure out, how do we negotiate between what Yitzchak actually said and the way that Rivka is saying what he said? There are others who will say, no, it just means the same thing. But I want to look at source number 10. I'm going to, your father said, I'll bless you before, right? Lefnei Hashem, lefnei moto. Lo niskar bekola parsha lefnei Hashem. The Ramban source 10 says, nobody said lefnei Hashem. Where do you get this lefnei Hashem from? It wasn't said. Rak b'makom hazeh, ki amr lo imo habracha lefnei Hashem tiyeh b'ruach hakodesh. What she said is that this is going to work, and the way I understand it is that he's saying, is that Rivka says this with her own ruach hakodesh. In this section, in source 11, the Targum says, this is on a slightly different verse. When Yaakov's afraid and says, I'm going to be cursed, and she says, the curse is on me, Alai itamar binuvua de loyete livatya. I was told in a prophecy, you will not be cursed. So it throws in Rivka's prophecy in the middle. And this is really unusual for the Targum to throw something like this in. Generally, he's very literal. And I actually now have to ask myself, which prophecy are we talking about? Is this a prophecy that she just got, or is Rivka applying the prophecy that she got a very long time ago in terms of the superiority of Yaakov compared to Esav? And I'm going to say it again. You can't understand this section by itself without knowing things that had happened previously. And maybe what looms large than anything else is the prophecy that Rivka had received even, you know, before they were born, knowing really who's who, with more clarity than Yitzchak can, who never apparently got that. Exactly. She understood that, again, two possibilities. Either this is a new prophecy now, that she was told about now, or she's applying the previous prophecy and she sees this is why I got that prophecy, in order to make sure that that prophecy comes true. Yep. Why trust God when we can do it? Rav David Zvi Hoffman, in source number 12, on the top of page 3, Lefnei Hashem, Bivadai Perusho, right? I love that. Bivadai Perusho, without question, B'shem Hashem. And I'm skipping a little bit. Alpha Pish Yitzchak lo hitbatem b'diyuk b'milim eile, hari yitachen shirivka hisika me'ofen diberosha Yitzchak aleisav, shirumnam levarech berchato b'shem Hashem hitkaven. Which means is that Rivka is writing a Perish Rashi on the words of Yitzchak. Of course, that's what Yitzchak meant. And a number of commentaries actually like to go in this direction, is that what she is doing is interpreting what it means. Meaning, this is what it means. When Yitzchak gives a bracha, of course, the bracha is coming from God. But still, I want to stay with this point, but it's not what he said. The Rav Hirsch in source 14, Lefnei Hashem, Hu Lashon Acharet Lenafshi. He says it means the same thing. By the way, I don't find that all that convincing, because I think that there's something else that's going on. The Ktav VeKabbalah, which is like a little bit underneath source 14, the Lashon Lefnei Hashem, where it's bolded, She'amar Rivka, Ein Zeh Shinoi Mima She'amar Yitzchak Tivrech Nafshi. Again, just like you saw in Rav Hirsch, it's interesting, two 19th century commentaries both go in the exact same direction. No, it means the same thing. Rivka didn't change anything. It's the same thing. If a holy person gives a blessing, it wasn't something that just occurred in their mind. That the holy person becomes some kind of a kli, of a channel to bring things down from heaven. Ki yidabek b'makshavato l'nyanim ruchaniyim elokiyim v'nefesh mufshetet micham barato u'mitkasheret pe'elyonim v'ke'il omedet shem lefnei Hashem. It becomes as if you're standing in front of God, this kind of soul like Yitzchak. So Yitzchak's soul is as if it's standing in front of God. So of course it means the same thing. L'mshich mitov Hashem el ha'muchan l'kabel ha'brachot u'v'zeh tosar hatzluna me'al hatzadeket hazot. And he goes, and therefore you could now give an answer again that one could have claimed against this holy one, tzadeket hazot, this righteous woman, Rivka, because some of you may be upset with her right now. Eich hirsha la'atzma l'ramot et Yitzchak l'asot hefech ritzono. How could she get involved with the opposite of what he wanted? Amnam, b'vo'enu elikar kavana ma'aseha nechonim ma'od. If you get to the essence, it was absolutely correct. Ki acharei sheshema divrei Yitzchak l'vorech brachat ha'nefesh she'amuchuvan bo l'fnei Hashem klom l'fi ritzon Hashem. Once he wants to give a bracha, which is really l'fnei Hashem, and it's the will of God, hinei hayo yoda'a b'birur gamur she'brachato l'esav inene l'fi ritzon Hashem. She knew that Esav's, by the way, this goes all the way back to her nevuah, obviously. She knew that the blessing of Esav was not according to ritzon Hashem. K'mo she'nemar la mipia nevuah. Right, v'rav yavod seir, shagadol ye nichna tachat hatseir, v'hayagam hi yada begodol zeh shema asav mikul kalim v'inenu uriyim lebracha. And she knew that the behavior of Esav was unworthy of getting that kind of a bracha. Eich taniach Yitzchak levor pi Hashem levarechet agadol. How can she just stand on the side and let Yitzchak do something which was wrong? Ulasato rosh al echa achiv ubrachato zot tia bracha mutat lefish lo yadam. Ma'amar ha'nevui, v'rav yod sa'ir. That Yitzchak was misled because he was ignorant of the prophecy. and therefore he was going to do something wrong. V'gam lo yada shema asav mekukalem, and Esav, and Yitzchak also doesn't know that Esav acts in an inappropriate way. V'einu roi levarcha, and is not worthy to get a mevarcha. V'im taniach oto levarech et hagadol tia machshela zot tachat yadav v'tashem nafsho b'zeh. Yitzchak will be guilty if he blesses Esav. V'lo retzta lo dia amitata devar li Yitzchak, but, and this is almost exactly what Jerry said before, and but he doesn't. She does not want to say the exact truth to him. She doesn't want him to know how bad Esav really is, and she doesn't want to tell him. And therefore, she was correct in acting in this way, in not to cause pain to the tzaddik, to Yitzchak, who could have, by mistake, done the opposite of God's will. Uvachachma nifla hishtadla shivreich Yitzchak kefirit sono, and she used incredible wisdom in order to make sure that Yitzchak gives the blessing according to his will. Birchot hanefesh shehu kefirit son Hashem. V'zeita kavanat Yitzchak b'emet. What Yitzchak really wanted to do is to bless the one who's deserving, and he did not realize what was going on. So again, this is really very interesting. I don't agree with any of this, by the way. Who am I disagreeing with? The Haktava Kabbalah. It's only 19th century, not so long ago. Yeah, I'm from the 20th century. I mean, it's not. I just kind of still lasted into the 21st. Anyway, I do like the effort. I like the effort, but if we're really careful, and we try to be careful in the beginning when we're reading, if we're going to be careful, Yitzchak was very interesting. He's very interesting in terms of his use of God, because he's responsive. He knows exactly who he's talking to. He knows exactly. I know he's. What are you talking about? He's fooled, but nonetheless, he's responsive to the very responsive to what he hears. So when the person speaks of God, then Yitzchak speaks of God. When the person doesn't speak of God, then he doesn't speak of God. Which means, let me show you. He's actually being very sensitive, and he's being very careful. In source number 15, we find Rivka, Lidrosh Tashem, we find the prophecy. Good. In source number 16, we have the conversation between Esav and Yaakov. No mention of God in that back and forth. In source 17, when Avimelech spies on Rivka and Yitzchak, and then he says, you know, how is it, you know, I thought that it was your sister. I said I was going to die. By the way, you say, okay, that's fine. But when Avram was in the same situation, Avram says, which is Avram talks about God, and he may have been wrong. We spoke about that. He may have been wrong to speak about God to somebody who's a complete pagan. Why are you mentioning God? But Yitzchak doesn't. When Yitzchak is talking to a pagan, he doesn't talk about God. And that's why, you know, this whole section in the middle, Yitzchak has a number of things with Avimelech and so on. By the way, they recognize God at some point. Oh, God is with you. So it's very interesting to know when Yitzchak speaks of God and when he doesn't speak of God, and to who he does and to who he doesn't. In source number 19, God blesses him. On the next pasuk, again, he speaks of God in many occasions. What it comes down to is who he's speaking to. On the other hand, if we look at Yaakov and Esav, there was one other conversation between them, which is important, and that's in source number 20. And that is when Yaakov comes back, and Esav brought 400 soldiers, and we suspect that he was not the marching band. We suspect that it was a little bit more sinister. Thank you. Source 20, and they go running to one another and they embrace. And Esav levisa pasukei v'yisav et dinav v'yaret et nashim v'et yaldim v'yomer mi'elalach. Who are all these people? V'yomer yaldim, and what does Yaakov answer? Hayaldim ashachanan elokim et avdecha. And Yaakov mentions God. It's what God has blessed me with. So Yaakov is one of those we mentioned last week. Who says he's the Baruch Hashem guy, right? They all come, they bow down, and so on. And Yaakov tries to give him a gift. The source number in Pasuk Yud, "Vayom Yaakov alna im namatzati cheminach v'kach minchati miyadi ki al kein reiti panach kirot pnei Elohim v'tirtzeni." That which most likely goes to the struggle and the wrestling night before. Kach mat birchati asher huvat lach ki chanani elu kim v'chi yeshli kol. God has blessed me and He gave me everything. V'yivtzar bo v'yikach. And again, if you keep on going back and forth, and so Esav will say, Yeshli Rav, Pasuk before, Pasuk that. V'yom Esav, Yeshli Rav, Achi, Yelach Asher Lach. Again, Esav, there's no God on his lips. Yaakov, it is. And that's what makes this a really interesting conversation, because I think what Yaakov does, Yaakov talks about God. Yaakov lives with God. By the way, Yaakov's his mother's son. Rivka also hears God. God's in her conversation. Rivka raises Yaakov. Yaakov talks like Rivka. By the way, if you look on the little bottom, I've been recently putting a working title: three tenors and a soprano. But the three tenors are the voices of Yaakov, the voices of Yitzhak and Yaakov, and of Esav. Yaakov's, and the soprano, of course, is Rivka. Rivka speaks of God. Yaakov speaks of God. Esav never speaks of God. Yitzhak speaks of God when it's appropriate to speak of God. And now you realize that when he speaks to Esav, he deems it inappropriate. And the only time he speaks of Esav and he speaks of God is when it's actually Yaakov, because Yaakov has spoken of God. Which means, I try to use all of this to really get to a point, and the point is the relationship with God between our various characters. What really emerges out of all this, yes, Yitzhak is a very, very spiritual person who's trying to bring spirituality to a place that it really isn't there, and that's his wonderful experiment with Esav, to try to get Esav into an experience of doing mitzvot. And maybe that will bring him to a place, and of course, part of the... See, I told my students this yesterday. It's very easy to fool your parents, because your parents always want to believe the best. They always want to believe that you're doing the right thing. They want to believe in you, so it's just so easy to fool them. I said, teachers like this also. I said, it's harder to fool me because I'm from Brooklyn, and therefore jaded. But it's easy to fool people who really want to believe in the best. And Yitzhak wants to believe that he succeeded in his education by taking Esav, turning his hunting into a mitzvah, and now he's coming back and he's saying, please, and he's speaking about God. And it's only in that conversation with Esav that he speaks of God. On the other hand, when he's blessing Yaakov, he talks about God. When he knows it's Yaakov, the end of the parasha, he speaks about God. There's no hesitation. In other conversations, when it's somebody who isn't a God consciousness, Yitzhak speaks about God. So Yitzhak is actually really interesting then, that he's probably far more sensitive than any of you, because people always give Yitzhak a hard time. He's incredibly sensitive. He speaks of God to people who are within it, and he doesn't speak of God to people who are not there, meaning why have that conversation, even though there's this tragic point in terms of Esav. I mean, it is really interesting to think about Esav now, growing up in that home, growing up, you know, with a brother like that, with a mother like this, with a father like this, and still this kind of a rebellion which is taking place within him. And yes, he rebels. And I'm not overstating this. Yes, he marries two Canaanite girls who specifically, you know, his grandfather sent the servant far away to make sure not to marry somebody Canaanite. Esav does that, you know, and by the way, two of them is also problematic. I have a suspicion about this, but not for today. But he specifically does things which are wrong, and he does not allow himself to be moved by, again, this consciousness of monotheism, which everybody else has. Rivka, it's overflowing with, even when Yitzhak doesn't say it. She hears it. She reads between the lines. She knows that God is there all the time. So again, I think you learn something about Rivka in this whole section. On the other hand, you learn something about Yaakov. Yaakov can't help but speaking about God. Again, leaving the Beit HaLevi aside. He speaks about God. Why do you come to him? Well, Baruch Hashem, because that's who Yaakov is. Even talking to Esav, he speaks about God. But Esav doesn't. So therefore, I think now we're able to answer the question, you know, what are the relationship of each one of them with God? I think we have a lot more information than when we started. I think there's two sides of it. One side of it is that he was hoping he'd be more successful with Esav, and Esav could be talking about God. And I think I think the fright is that he completely misread Yaakov. I don't think he realized that Yaakov had this kind of capability to behave in this kind of a way. And Yaakov is much more of a richer personality than he had realized before. Which is, Yaakov is far more prepared to deal with the real world. When he sends him at the end to Lavan, You know, that should be a little scary thing to send him to Lavan. He could send him to Lavan now. I mean, even though he has a hard time with him, he could send him to Lavan because Yaakov has a chance of succeeding. It's that, and I guess he would have to say is that even Esav trying to be like Yaakov can't do it, and maybe it's more of a tone than it is of a content.